the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Novak, John Russell, and Brian Lynn. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Dan Novak.
The National Hockey League, or NHL, says it will not send players to the Olympic Games in China because of COVID-19 concerns. NHL chief Gary Bettman made the announcement Wednesday, following a sudden, sharp rise in cases of the disease among players. At least 50 professional hockey matches have been postponed as a result. The 16 days of winter sports competition begins in Beijing on February 4th. The NHL says it will use that period to play the regular season games it had to postpone. Our focus and goal have been and must remain to responsibly and safely complete the entirety of the NHL regular season and Stanley Cup playoffs in a timely manner. This will be the second straight Olympic season the NHL will miss. It did not send players to the 2018 games in Pyeongchang, South Korea, because of a contractual dispute. Earlier this week, the NHL decided to temporarily stop playing games until after the Christmas holiday to stop the spread of the virus. The league is also bringing back more COVID-19 safety policies, like daily testing and limits on the size of player gatherings. The league had until January 10th to withdraw from the games without paying a financial penalty. As a result, the men's Olympic hockey tournament will continue without NHL players for the second straight time. The NHL did not participate in the Olympics until 1998. NHL players played in 5 Olympics in a row through Sochi in 2014. During labor negotiations last year, the NHL and Players Union agreed to participate in the 2022 Olympics. But the deal was dependent on pandemic conditions not worsening. A generation of hockey stars, including Swede Victor Hedman, will need to wait until 2026 to play in the Olympic men's hockey tournaments for the first time. "It's a thing you've been looking forward to for a very long time," Hedman said. "For us to not be able to go, it's going to hurt for a while." The NHL was set to participate in the Olympics until the Delta and Omicron variants began spreading in North America. Before an outbreak in Calgary, Alberta, in early December, only 5 NHL games needed to be rescheduled. Several NHL players had expressed concern about going to the games. Las Vegas player Robin Lehner withdrew his name to represent Sweden out of mental health concerns. Canadian Connor McDavid said the possible 5-week quarantine requirement was unsettling. "I'm still a guy that's wanting to go play in the Olympics," McDavid said. "But we also want to make sure it's safe for everybody. For all the athletes, not just for hockey players." I'm Dan Novak.
Restaurant owners in the United States and Britain are worried about the future of their industry. Their reasons for concern include a labor shortage, high food costs, and the Omicron version of the new coronavirus. In November, the U.S. Census Bureau said that sales at restaurants and drinking places, or bars, in the United States reached an estimated $73.7 billion. That is an increase of 37% over the same month last year. But the increase was partly the result of higher prices as restaurants try to deal with the cost of inflation. Many restaurant owners are concerned about the future of the industry in the coming months. Carolyn Glover is the owner of the restaurant Annette near Denver, Colorado. Glover described her feelings as extremely worried. She added, "I've never felt like we were out of the woods." Out of the woods is an expression that means out of danger. Glover worries about renewed restrictions if coronavirus infections increase. For other businesses, the main concern is finding enough workers. In a recent study of 3,000 U.S. restaurant operators, 77% said they did not have enough workers. That information comes from the National Restaurant Association, an industry trade group. Many restaurant workers have started new careers or have gone back to school. Jada Sartor of Grand Rapids, Michigan, said her pay increased from $10 an hour to $16 an hour this year as restaurants tried to employ more workers. But she recently quit her serving job because she could not find childcare that she was able to pay for. "The cost of living is just so high you can't afford to really live," she said. Kristen Jana is the owner of the restaurant Vinology in Ann Arbor, Michigan. She said she raised pay nearly 40% to get and keep her 35 workers. "It was a change that needed to happen in the service industry," she said. But Jana cannot increase restaurant prices enough to make up for the pay increase. "Food costs in the U.S. have increased," Jana said, "and skilled workers have become costly, too. Everyone knows that beef is more expensive, but high-end, highly skilled labor is expensive, too," she said. "That is the very tricky part of our business right now." Sarah Lund is the owner of Bodega and the Rest, a bar and restaurant in Salt Lake City, Utah. She said the cost of materials to make food rose between 15% and 40% this year. In Britain, the fast spread of the Omicron version of the new coronavirus is also hurting the food industry. Restaurants, hotels, and other eating places report decreases in business at an important time of the year. Scotland and Wales have promised millions of dollars in aid for their businesses. That has placed pressure on the government of Prime Minister Boris Johnson to do the same in England. Patrick Dardis heads a chain of about 220 bars, or pubs, called Young's. Dardis said he hoped officials would come up with a financial aid plan soon. About 30% of the chain's planned events were canceled last week. "There are thousands of businesses, not just pubs, that could collapse in January if the current situation isn't partnered with proper financial support," he said. UK Hospitality is an industry trade group in Britain. It urged reduced taxes, saying concerns about Omicron have led to the loss of $2.6 billion in sales this month. I'm John Russell.
As new technologies progressed over the past year, some words used to describe them rose in popularity. Here is a look at some technology terms that gained wide attention during 2021. Major tech companies began talking more about the metaverse. The term describes a non-physical world in which individuals can interact through different kinds of virtual technology. For example, a metaverse could permit people living on different sides of the world to meet up through technology and virtually go on a vacation, play sports, or work together on projects. The main technologies that would drive such a world would be virtual reality, or VR, and augmented reality, AR. Other yet-to-be-invented technologies would also be used to improve experiences within the metaverse. NFT stands for non-fungible token. It is based on a technology called blockchain, which is also used with digital currencies known as cryptocurrencies. An NFT can be attached to a piece of digital artwork or other things existing in digital form. The NFT can be used to provide proof that the pieces are real. While anyone can view the work, the buyer has official ownership rights over the pieces. In March, an NFT created by American artist Beeple sold for nearly $70 million at Christie's. It was the first sale ever by a major auction house of art that did not exist in physical form. Web3 is used to describe a possible next stage of the Internet. A decentralized internet run on the record-keeping technology, blockchain. This model would permit users to hold ownership over their presence and control their own data on the internet. Today's internet, known as Web2, permits major technology companies like Meta's Facebook and Alphabet's Google to provide services in exchange for user data. The term decentralization became widely used in the tech industry. It describes a process that aims to reduce the amount of power companies or governments have over technology platforms. The idea is to hand this power over to users. A growing number of social media companies announced they were developing ways for their users to communicate through voice. The moves came after a rise in popularity of the social media app Clubhouse. The app permits users to communicate through audio in virtual discussion rooms. Among other companies announcing new audio services were Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Reddit. GameFi is a term that describes the process of gamers earning cryptocurrency through playing video games. An example is when players earn financial tokens or awards for winning battles in the games. The word altcoin covers all cryptocurrencies other than Bitcoin. This ranges from Ethereum, which aims to support a future financial system, to Dogecoin, a digital currency that began as a joke but was later popularized by Tesla chief Elon Musk. The term FABS is short for Semiconductor Fabrication Plant. A semiconductor is a material necessary for producing a wide range of electronic devices. The word became popular as a limited supply of chips from fabs were blamed for a worldwide shortage of everything from automobiles to personal electronic devices. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. In our last program, we told you the story of the Statue of Liberty. It was given to the United States by the people of France. Lady Liberty holds a bright torch high over the harbor of New York City. Millions of immigrants coming to America passed the statue as ships carried them to the Immigration Processing Center on Ellis Island. Leo Scully and Morris Joyce tell the story of immigration in the United States during the 1800s.
American life was changing, and it was changing quickly. Before 1860, the United States had an agricultural economy. After 1860, the country began to change from an agricultural to an industrial economy. In 1860, American shops and factories produced less than $2,000 million worth of goods. 30 years later, in 1890, American factories produced $10,000 million worth. By then, more than 5 million persons were working in factories and mines. Another 3 million had jobs in the building industries and transportation.
Year after year, production continued to increase, and the size of the industrial labor force continued to grow. A great many of the new industrial workers came from American farms. Farm work was hard, and the pay was low. Young men left the family farms as soon as they could. They went to towns and cities to look for an easier and better way of life. Many of them found it in the factories. A young man who worked hard and learned new skills could rise quickly to better and better jobs. This was not only true for farmers, but also for immigrants who came to the United States from foreign countries. They came from many different lands and for many different reasons, but all came with the same hope for a better life in a new world.
In the 1850s, America's Industrial Revolution was just beginning. Factories needed skilled workers, men who knew how to do all the necessary jobs. Factory owners offered high pay to workers who had these skills. British workers had them. Many had spent years in British factories. Pay was poor in Britain, and these skilled workers could get much more money in America. So many of them came, hundreds of thousands. Some factories
even some industries, seemed completely British.
Cloth factories in Falls River, Massachusetts, were filled with young men from Lancashire, England. Most of the workers in the shipyards of San Francisco were from Scotland. Many of the coal miners in America were men from the British mines in Wales. Many were farmers who came to America because they could get land for nothing. They could build new farms for themselves in the rich land of the American West.
One of the best-liked songs in Britain then was a song about the better life in America. Its name, To the West. Its words helped many men decide to make the move to America. To the West, to the land of the free, where mighty Missouri rolls down to the sea. Where a man is a man if he's willing to toil, and the poorest may harvest the fruits of the soil. Where the young may exult and the aged may rest. Away, far away, to the land of the West.
To another group of immigrants, America was the last hope. Ireland in the 1840s suffered one crop failure after another. Hungry men had to leave. In 1850 alone, more than 117,000 people came to the United States from Ireland. Most had no money and little education. To those men and women, America was a magic name.
Throughout Europe, when times were hard, people talked of going to America. In some countries, organizations were formed to help people emigrate to the United States. A Polish farmer wrote to such an organization in Warsaw. I want to go to America, but I have no money. I have nothing but the 10 fingers of my hands, a wife, and 9 children. I have no work at all, although I am strong and healthy and only 45 years old. I have been to many towns and cities in Poland, wherever I could go. Nowhere could I earn much money. I wish to work, but what can I do? I will not steal, and I have no work. So I beg you to accept me for a journey to America.
As the years passed, fewer people were moving to America for a better job. Most were coming now for any job at all. Work was hard to find in any of the cities in Europe. A British lawmaker told Parliament in 1870 that Englishmen were leaving their country not because they wanted to, but because they had to. They could not find work at home. He said that even as he spoke, hundreds were dying of hunger in London and other British cities. They were victims of the new revolution in agriculture and industry. Small family farms were disappearing. In their places rose large, modern farms that could produce much more. New machines took the place of men, and millions of farmers had to look for other work. Some found it in the factories. Industry was growing quickly, but not quickly enough to give jobs to all the farmers out of work.
In the next 10 years, millions of people made the move from Britain, Germany, and the Scandinavian countries. But then, as industry in those countries grew larger and more jobs opened, the flood of immigration began to slow. The immigrants now were coming from southern and eastern Europe. Anti-Jewish feeling swept Russia and Poland. Violence against Jews caused many of them to move to America. In the late 1880s, cholera spread through much of southern Italy. Fear of the disease led many families to leave for the United States. Others left when their governments began building up strong armies. Young men who did not want to be soldiers often escaped by moving to America. Big armies were costly, and many people left because they did not want to pay the high taxes. Whatever the reason, people continued to immigrate to the United States.
These new immigrants were not like those who came earlier. These new immigrants had no skills. Most were unable to read or write. Factory owners found that these Eastern and Southern Europeans were hard workers. They did not protest because the work was hard and the pay was low. They did not demand better working conditions. They did not join unions or strike. Factory owners began to replace higher-paid American and British workers with the new immigrants. Business leaders wanted more of the new workers. They urged the immigrants to write letters to their friends and relatives in the old country. Tell them to come to America, that there are plenty of jobs.
Letters from America brought many more immigrants. The big steamship companies also helped industry to get more of the new workers. They paid thousands of agents throughout Europe to sell tickets for the trip to America. Their efforts meant that steamships bringing grain to Europe could return to America filled with immigrants. They came by the hundreds of thousands, people of all religions from all across Europe. Many remained in New York and other eastern cities, but many others moved westward. They took jobs in the steel factories of Pennsylvania and the coal mines of West Virginia. They worked in the lumber camps of Michigan and in the stockyards and meat packing plants of Chicago.
Within a few years, foreign-born workers held most of the unskilled jobs in many American industries. American workers began to protest. They demanded an end to the flood of immigration. That will be our story in the next program of The Making of a Nation.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.